Good morning to you all. Happy pre-winter.
Good morning.
I guess we're going to get a winter test exercise here pretty soon. And for the youth, of course, this is Does God Exist Month? And I said flippantly, well, yes, he does, and so let me continue with my sermonette. I want to talk about one aspect of God's glory. In the process, and I want to give you, parents, a few ideas, also grandparents, how you can pass on to your children to help them see that, yes, God does indeed exist. When you read the Bible, there are several episodes where God shows his glory to humanity. And one of the most spectacular ones is in Exodus chapter 19. And if we could turn to Exodus chapter 19, and I want to start in verse 10. And if you could just follow along, and I'll read from, I think it's the English Standard Version. It's the one that was in my computer Bible that I found to be best. And Exodus chapter 19, verse 10, the Lord said to Moses, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments, and be ready for the third day, for on the third day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people." And if we could skip down to verse 17, "Then Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God, and they took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke, because the Lord had descended on it in fire. The smoke of it went up like the smoke of a kiln, and the whole mountain trembled greatly. And as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him in thunder." Verse 20, "And the Lord came down on Mount Sinai on top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up." And now I'm going to skip down to Exodus chapter 20 and verse 18. Exodus 20, verse 18. "And now when all the people saw the thunder and the flashes of lightning and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, the people were afraid and trembled, and they stood afar off. And they said to Moses, 'You speak to us, we'll listen, but do not let God speak to us, lest we die.'" So this made an impression on them. "Moses said, 'Do not fear, for God has come to test you, that the fear of him may be before you, that you may not sin.' And the people stood afar off while Moses drew near in the thick darkness where God was. And the Lord said to Moses, 'Thus shall you say to the people of Israel, you have seen for yourselves that I have talked to you from heaven.'" And there's a different vision in Revelation chapter 4 where John describes the area around the throne of God. And I don't need for you to turn to it because you probably have it memorized, but Revelation chapter 4, starting in verse 2, it says, "At once I was in the Spirit, and behold, a throne stood in heaven, and one was seated on the throne. And he who sat there had the appearance of jasper and carnelian, and around the throne was a rainbow that had the appearance of an emerald. Around the throne were 24 thrones, and seated on the throne were 24 elders, clothed in white garments, with golden crowns on their heads. And from the throne came flashes of lightning, and rumbles, and peals of thunder. Before the throne were burning seven torches of fire, which are the seven spirits of God. And before the throne there was a sea of glass like crystal. And around the throne, on each side of the throne, were four living creatures, full of eyes in front and behind." Each of these passages describes God and his glory in one form or the other, but the glory is one implied by the scope and the scale of his power and authority over the physical reality and over the imagery. As members of the modern society, we have seen such powers, such displays of authority and power in the past. We see them quite commonly, and they're human-inspired. I mean, do you doubt me? How many here saw what happened to Alderaan when it was blown up by the Death Star? I mean, millions of people perished in an instant, and the Force was disturbed. And then, after all, the Clone Wars stretched across more planets than were ever mentioned in the Bible. And we've seen it all in 3D, I'm sure. And I'm sure that down there in Disney World, they had some displays to that effect. While I speak, of course, tongue in cheek, or as my daughter would say, I'm being silly, we do have a problem long in this age where humanity now has the means to depict, at least on the movie screen and in 3D in reality with surround sound, events that easily compete in scope and visual impact with anything that God inspired to be written in the Bible. But consider when God interacted with Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 19. In 1 Kings chapter 19, starting in verse 11, and he said, "Go forth and stand upon the mount before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by with a great and strong wind, rent the mountains." I mean, a wind so strong that it broke the rocks into pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind, and after the wind was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake, and after the quake of fire, but the Lord was not in the fire, and after the fire, a still, small voice. And it was so that when Elijah heard it happened, he wrapped his face with his mantle, and he went out and stood in the entering in of the cave, and behold, came a voice to him and says, Where art you thou, Elijah? Now, in my meditation the last few days, the idea came to me that I don't really need God to show me a vast sea of glass like crystal, or for him to speak in a way to break open the mountains with wind or an earthquake. I don't worship God because of his power to do this. I think that we should know God has infinite power over the physical reality. He can make the physical reality do anything it wants it to do. I worship God because of the many other ways he speaks to all humanity with a still small voice. Now, I design systems to process information. I also help design businesses, which are systems in themselves. I have designed and written accounting systems and data collection systems. A system that I designed almost 30 years ago is still being used and now has over 13 billion records in it. I understand the attributes of a complete system. The brain of an animal also processes information. You know, you have stimulus and response. It took a designer who knew far more than humanity does today to design and construct even the brain of a tiny mouse, like the one my cat caught last night and dropped on our living room carpet. I thought he was sounding a little odd. I let him in the door, and he goes, mew, mew, and brings it in. The brain of the mouse is a more glorious system than any airline reservation system by 1,000 times, maybe 1,000,000 times. God tells us in Romans chapter 1:19 that he makes himself known to humanity, and he does this in many ways. Our job as parents is to help God to be real to our children and to help them allow God to reveal himself to them. One of those avenues is how awesome and well-designed and complete the biosphere is. Now, the concept of a system itself is important to teach to a child. I see kids out here and back riding bicycles or a little scooter. I see Faith in what looks to be like a little plastic chariot. She's very happy in that. Parents can even use a simple toy like that to explain the concept of a system, that each part of the thing has a place and each part is designed to fit with the other parts. And a part is missing or broken, the toy doesn't work. It's a part is the wrong size compared to others, the toy doesn't work. In a sense, even the toy is a system. And, you know, the system has to be complete. I mean, after all, if someone made a little plastic chariot, but it had a giant airplane wing sticking out of one side, that wouldn't work. Now, every system has a functional goal, and parents, you know, they can ask, what is the goal of a toy? Of course, it's to have as much fun as possible by doing something. And if the toy was not a complete system, like a complete bicycle or a complete scooter, it would just be a pile of parts. It'd be a hunk of junk. Except if you could throw it at your brother, it wouldn't be any fun at all. Now, you know, there's another concept called systematically complete. Now, what if someone made a little toy, but they left off the steering wheel? Well, it might look neat, and all the parts are shiny, and the thing smelled right, but you couldn't do anything with it. So, or if someone made an airplane, and they left off the pilot's control wheel. You know, you'd have a nice, beautiful airplane, then people could come in and sit down and be served a meal or something, but the pilot couldn't steer it. So every system has to be complete. Now, you know, a system is something that is made up of components that contribute to the overall function, to the effect of achieving a goal. Each part working in harmony with the other parts. And although the single event of conception of a human is a miraculous thing, The orderly growth of a human from a single fertilized egg to a mature adult is even more amazing. You can illustrate the creative power of God by asking your child, what happens as he grew up, and he knows he gets taller and taller, his hand grew at a different rate than the rest of his body. You might be hands that were too big or too small. That might look funny. It might be a real problem. But what if instead of it was your hand, it was your heart or your liver or your eyes or any other part that's important? It could kill you to not have the right size heart for your body. Part of God's glory is shown by how the body grows. And let me go one level deeper. You know, the body, even the body of the tiniest mouse or insect. You know, Max and I caught a moth out here and back, and it's a tiny thing. And its life is very fragile. It will be killed because its system is incomplete with the temperatures that are coming, or incompatible with the temperatures that are coming. But the cells of all living things are made up of molecules, and the molecules are made up of atoms. Everything that we see, everything, the paper that my words are printed on, is made up of atomic elements. And atoms are made up of protons and neutrons and electrons. Now, the most simple atom is hydrogen. It has one proton and one electron. Hydrogen has, of course, its own unique properties. At room temperature, it's a gas, and you can't smell it. It easily combines with oxygen to form water. It is the fundamental building block of the nuclear reaction that takes place in the core of all stars, like the star that gives us our sunlight, that gives us our heat, that makes it possible for plants to grow, that makes it possible for life to exist on Earth, that makes it possible for God to have humanity. And the next most complex element is helium. Now, helium has two protons, two neutrons, and two electrons, but it's a completely different chemical, just with the tiny change of one more proton, really. It's a completely different chemical, even though it is also a gas at room temperature. And while hydrogen easily bonds with other elements, helium doesn't want to bond with anything. And for this very reason, it's very useful in welding. And the next most complex element is lithium. Now, lithium has three protons, three electrons, and four neutrons. At room temperature, you know, just with one more proton, this is a silvery crystalline solid. Lithium is very useful in batteries to store electricity. I mean, we look for your cell phone has a lithium ion battery. Lithium also has an effect on the human brain, and it's used in some psychotropic drugs. It occurs naturally in drinking water in very small quantities. There are 118 unique elements that have been discovered so far. The heaviest element found in any living thing is tungsten, which has 74 protons, 74 electrons, and 110 neutrons. Well, first of all, who made up all these rules? How come something with 74 protons behaves the way it does, behaves the way that tungsten does? Now, God tells us that he made man out of the dust of the ground. He named the first man Adam, a play on the Hebrew word Adama, meaning earth. God created all living things using only the various combinations of 74 different chemical elements. And he set a biosphere in motion that is self-balancing and has its own order to it. It's a stunning system that is so complex that humanity can hardly understand little tiny parts of it with enough completeness, even though millions of scientists are really studying it and working to reverse engineer it. And this is, for me, the more glorious part of God than anything God might do by visual effect. The scope of the thoughts and understanding and vision and to borrow a word, strategery, that just the planning for the biosphere implies is, for me, the still small voice that proves that God exists. This plan is something that could, if it was written down and put on a shelf, of course it would take a lot of shelf space. And if the books were just sitting there, they would have no voice of their own. But the plan itself is a totally silent witness to God's glory. Every system is designed to advance an end goal. God's systems here on earth are designed to bring humanity into his family. That's why earth exists. It is true of the biosphere with all its beauty and glory. It's true of the institution of marriage, and it's true of the holy days. These are all systems that are complete in itself with an end goal to bring humanity to God's family. God promises us at the end time, the God of this world will have the ability to put on public displays of power expressly designed to deceive mankind about who is God. When Satan's servants on earth can call fire down from heaven, as is prophesied, this is not a creative act, it's a deceptive one. So displays of power don't necessarily establish divine authority. God's physical creation speaks to his glory like no display of power ever can. And in some of the details and principles that are shown by the creation, even a child can see that God does, in fact,